Hello and good morning. Welcome to the Fiber Hooligan. I am Ron Niskin, sitting in for Benjamin Levite, and joined by my traveling companion, business partner, and lovely wife, Teresa.
Good morning.
In case we haven't met yet, and you're wondering who we are and why we are here, T and I are the Buffalo Wool Company. We make yarns and garments from the downy undercoat of the American bison. We are huge fans of Benjamin and his show, and were originally slated to be on as guests this week. But Benjamin's other responsibilities at hopscotchweb.com have been pressing, and he needed to spend some time focusing on the development there. So, originally as sort of a lark, I popped off that we could drive the bus for a couple of weeks while he was working, and being the trusting and generous soul that he is, Benjamin agreed. A show like this is kind of like a new puppy, and this puppy is now 26 weeks old.
This puppy
been well trained so far, and we're going to do our best to keep it housebroken and not teach it any bad habits. We are coming to you live from the mountains of Taos, New Mexico, after just finishing up the Taos Wool Festival. And we'll give you a little disclaimer that this is our first time doing it. We have not the best connection we've ever had, and we hope you'll bear with us in case of any technical difficulties. So grab a Diet Dr. Pepper or a big shot of tequila, and here we go. The first order of business is a little of update on the podcaster throwdown that's benefiting the Halos of Hope. Knit Cafe has taken up the gauntlet and joined the podcaster throwdown. And our current official tally is the Knitmore Girls, 51, Naughty Girls, 5, Sockaholic, 3, and Craftlit, 3. But Team Craftlit's threatened to knit evil like Madame Defarge. We also hope you're on track with a 30-day sweater challenge, and you can keep up at 30daysweater.com/live. And today we are joined by one of the nicest, most talented, prolific designers around. If we tried to list all of her accomplishments and achievements, we wouldn't have time to talk to her. But for those of you who don't know about her, Cornelia is now in the 30th year of her design career. She's a versatile designer with 12 pattern books and several hundred patterns to her name. She's the author of Gnarl, The Man Behind the Yarn, and about to release the poems collection for Universal Yarns. Welcome, Ms. Cornelia Tuttle Hamilton.
Well, thank you for having me, and thanks for your kind words, Ron. Hello, Teresa.
Good morning, Cornelia.
That's right. It's still morning there.
It is. We're a little behind.
It is. We're on mountain time.
Well, the first thing we have to do is petition Benjamin to change the name of the show to the Fiber Hooligans. And we can put a parenthesis around that S if he wants to.
Well, I think that would be a wonderful suggestion. There's many of us out there.
Yes.
And I think we've all got a little hooligan in us. let's give our listeners a little background about you. Kind of your pre-fiber arts history. Where did you grow up?
I'm born and raised on Long Island in New York State, and lived there even in the same house my whole upbringing, and went to college, studied English and lit. But I started making things, I started crafting heavily when I was 13. I started out with embroidery, doing pictures. And I embroidered grapevines on my pants and Led Zeppelin logos and all kinds of stuff. And then did a lot of crochet because it was popular at the time. And then I moved into macrame, and that's when I started selling my stuff when I was 16. I did jewelry with wax coating and beads and stuff. And then went into other costume jewelry and sold that in New York for a while. And then I got to knitting when I was about 22. I kept crocheting. I've just been crafting the whole time and selling since I was 16. And then I met knitting at 22 because I was young and didn't have a lot of money. And crochet at that time was really... out fashion wise and I thought, oh boy, I better learn how to knit because it takes a lot less yarn too. So I picked it up. My mother had taught me the rudiments when I was 8, but she wasn't a good knitter. And so I picked it up at 22 and knit something, and it didn't fit the way that I wanted it to fit. So I felt like it was way too painful of a process to just guess whether this was going to fit in the end. So I generally say that I started designing in self-defense.
I mean, starting that young, did you have a history of crafting in your family? Were your parents? And
yes, I did. Actually, my grandmother was a milliner and a crocheter and a painter, and then there was another one was a great quilter. I think her mother or somebody on that side of the family. This sort of kind of runs in feds, and there's painters too. So I haven't gotten around to that yet, but we'll see.
Well, we've got plenty of time, don't we? There's always something new next. So from New York, you've made quite a change. And can you tell us a little bit about where you live now?
Well, I started my career in Manhattan. I moved there after college and was encouraged by a woman that I met who I was working for. She owned a magazine. I was a receptionist, and I was knitting on the job, and I was knitting on all my jobs, and I basically got fired from most of them for that. But she encouraged me. She thought I had something, so she encouraged me. And then I just started to take it more seriously. Then I was in Manhattan for about 7 years, and then I moved to Sweden, which was a big change.
I can imagine.
Sounds exciting. I would love to go see Sweden.
Yeah, it was an adventure. So we had had friends from high school time through horseback riding that were Swedes, and so we got to know a gang of Swedes, and my mother's from Europe, so I was over there once in a while as a kid, so it wasn't that foreign to me. And then I would go up and visit the friends in Sweden, and then she was looking for somebody to rent her apartment for 8 months the last time I was up there. And I thought, well, 8 months is long enough to get some kind of foothold. So I just jumped at the chance, and that's how the whole thing started over there. And now it's 27 years later.
How awesome.
Well, maybe not 27, I guess 26, yeah.
It's okay. We have a little bit of feedback going on, Ron. Go ahead and ask your question, and I can ask my next.
Are there many differences between the Swedish knitting industry and the American? And
Well, when I moved there, I thought, oh, this is going to be great because everybody knits. And it was it was in 86, and that was the tail end of a huge boom, knitting boom in Sweden. And within 1 year of me getting there, I think for some reason I remember, I think 90% of the yarn shops closed in the country. And that sounds drastic, but it was something like 30 yarn shops in Gothenburg, and then there were 4 left or something. So the crash was just huge. People just stopped knitting from one day to the next. And then it was the longest trough of non-knitting, horrible. And we have troughs in our industry in every country. You know, it's not a steady... And there's a certain amount of steadiness to it. And then there's, what do you call it?
Right. It peaks and valleys. And
exactly.
We've had different resurgences and interest.
And the difference, I think, is that they learn it in school, or they did. Now it's a little bit more touch and go whether they learn it in school. And the biggest problem when I got there, now we're talking a 30-year perspective almost, 25 years, was it was still a lot of the older women didn't want to knit because they associated it with their childhood when they were forced to wear scratchy socks and things like that. And you know, but when I got there, I saw that there was a need for more novelty kind of yarns or fashion yarns, you could say. And through my work with Vogue Knitting for years and stuff, I knew what was on the American market. And these yarns were basically absent on the Swedish market. So I decided, well, why don't I try and start to bring them in? So I started to distribute yarn in Sweden about 15 years ago, 16 years ago.
And how was that received?
Well, it was, slow, you know, quiet. I mean, it's a tiny market. There's only 9 million people there. At the time, there were 8. And then you got to take away the men, and you have to take away the kids, and you have to take, blah, blah. And so it's a very, very tiny market. So we're talking the size of Manhattan market. And I don't know. I just never really dealt with that part of it. I just felt like I needed to start designing again, because I had done a couple of other things in Sweden. I had the biggest embroidery service where you could send in a photo and get back a counted cross stitch pattern with the yarn and the canvas. And I did that for about 10 years, all told. That was when the boys were small, and I just didn't have the time. I need a lot of time and quiet to design properly. I realized after 4 years of having kids, so I finally stopped trying to design because I was going crazy. And then I did this embroidery thing. But getting back to the yarn, I gradually built it up. People thought I was a little bit crazy. I figured out a new model for how to do it because of the EU. The European Union happened at the same time, which dramatically changed shipping situations in within the EU boundaries. And but the thing was, I was up against companies that were 100 years old, 130 years old. And the Swedes are quite, they know their brands and they stick with their tried and true stuff. So they're not, they can be a little bit adventurous. But then I also am a foreigner there. So I had some things working against me, but I thought, I'm a carrier. Hang on to that rag, and I just, I'm not going to let go, and I just kept going. I knew what I was doing, and in terms of that it was going to take a while. So I just hung in there, and so I still have going.
From what I understand, you've had quite an impact in actually changing the entire landscape of knitting over there, by bringing in the yarns, by introducing the new designs, and that's pretty much a world changer right there.
In the beginning of that situation, and I had the advantage of designing as well, being able to design in the yarns as well, and so that helped me. The biggest problem over there is market size. It's just too small for, in order to really make any money, you have to have things that appeal to most people in terms of if you're comparing it to how about making money in America, So it's a lot more fun over here in a way because there's so many people that you can have a niche product and, kind of get by with it, And not, your product is not something that every person buys. It's pretty specific and pretty special. So I think exactly what I'm talking about.
We do. It takes quite a bit of an introduction to the bison fibers for everyone to become educated on it and see how soft it is.
Yeah.
Believing on our yarns. So really, was pre-website even, right? So you didn't even have the luxury of marketing or advertising on the website when you were doing all this. So has that really grown for you?
I had a website. My husband at the time was interested in technology, so I had a website from way beginning, and I used to code mine with the HTML coding, and I learned how to do that. But, you know, people didn't have access to them. By the time I started to distribute, I think websites were, you know, but I was going to trade shows, and I think it was more done that way, you know what I mean? I don't even remember. So, and then I stopped doing trade shows because I felt like, and this maybe has this, I felt like the market was so small. The thing with over there is the market is so small that you have to protect each one of your stores. And by that I mean you don't tell the other store what this store is buying, the successful store, because people have to do their own homework and people have to buy the things that they that resonate with for them. And I was able to build up my thing. I wanted to do a business that was honest and not I usually say you can sell anybody anything one time. Now, and I know you guys know about this too. One time, it's almost not worth that sale because you have to set up an account and follow it up. And if you're only going to sell it that one time, it you know, you want a repeat customer. So I learned, you know, I just learned how to navigate and get what I wanted. And so what I did was I took really high-end lines. I have the Noro, Malabrigo, Colonnette, for instance. And my concept was to have yarns that would sell themselves without patterns. Because I realized that the pattern thing was going to be a problem because you have the language issues and, you know, beautiful yarn that you just want to have, that you fall in love with. And it worked out, you know. So, yeah. And
well, we definitely understand. It's, you know, it's one of those things that you can either have things that are design-driven or you can have the classics, the things that people just want to hold, snuggle, and like to make the classic type design, which is just makes it a lot easier, and you don't have those language barrier issues and things like that.
Well, they have great yarn in Sweden. They have a great design. You know, I didn't want to compete with what was already there. They have great straight, what I call straight yarns, smooth yarns. You know, great colors. Finland too, Norway too. So I didn't want to, I know my place. I mean, I can't compete with them. That would be arrogant to try and come in somehow. And so I just thought, okay, let me bring in the icing on the cake when they want to change it up a little bit, you know? So.
Well, we know that you've kind of taken it one step further. In addition to the beautiful yarns that you've distributed, you found a definite need for something else, and that's, I guess, how Hamilton Yarns came about. Can you tell us a little bit about what prompted that?
Yeah, I call my yarn company, my distribution company is called Hamilton Yarns. I decided, though, to have my own little yarn line, which I call Heaven's Hand, and I've got three qualities in there at the moment, that I sell to stores that are interested. I don't, I'm not particularly actively looking. I don't know. I have this weird kind of a marketing approach. I've got a couple of sales reps, but I just want to target people to work with. I don't want to go to TNNA and show that way, but it's not really what I want to do. Having said that, I might end up there anyway, but for now, I want to keep it smaller than that or more exclusive or whatever you want to call it.
I know that people have been pretty passionate about them. I know the Heaven in New York is especially one that's just amazingly beautiful. I think that's one of the most interesting things we've seen in a while.
What? I didn't hear that.
I was talking about Heaven in New York. I think that's one of the more beautiful yarns I've seen in quite a while.
Did you see Heaven in New York?
Yes. I apologize.
My latest project is a private label series where I offer shops the opportunity to pick their own colors that are exclusive to them, and then I design a label for them, and it has their shop name on it. And then if the shop is in, for instance, the shop that I work with in New York, the yarn company, we decided to call it Heaven in New York, or it could have been Heaven at the Yarn Company or Heaven in Kalamazoo or whatever but to have a distinctive name so that it's a private label, basically.
That seems to make it much more personal and unique.
Well, it's fun for the shop.
Capture the personality, yeah.
It gives them, gives the customer something with their name on it. It gives them some reason to come back to them. And it's just fun all the way around, you know.
Wonderful. And I understand that you've been working recently with Universal Yarns and have a new book coming out on the poems line.
I think it's out today. They were supposed to get it today. So it's called Moonfall.
Well, it couldn't be any better timing than here. So it's, can you tell us a little bit about the designs in the book?
Well, it's my third collection using the poems line. The first book was Reflections. It came out last fall. The second collection was actually an ebook that is not that well known. But then it's called Diversions. And this third one is also a booklet called Windfall, using the poems line. And I think it's a strong book. The feedback's been pretty good. Pre-sales have been pretty good. So I'm hoping, we're all hoping that it'll be well met once it gets out there.
Well, I'll be honest. Teresa and I finally saw poems for the first time this weekend. We we're at a shop here in Taos, and they had a big display in front, and they were promoting the book as well. So I think that's going to be from what we've seen, I think it's going to be really impressive. Cammie has put up a link on the chat room, and hopefully people will have a chance to check that out. So, your last I'm sorry?
No, go ahead. Sorry.
I would say one of the things that I found the most interesting is because me as well as many of the listeners out there are big Noro fans. I finally had a chance to look at Noro, the man behind the yarns. Can you give us a little backstory on how you got a chance to meet with him and do that?
My work with Noro, actually Noro is represented in America by KFI, Knitting Fever. Let me just do one thing here. Hello? I'm trying to hook up another speaker here.
Okay.
There.
That's better.
I had approached... Can you hear?
Yep.
Yes.
Okay, great. I approached Sion Eloff, the owner of KFI, because I worked in a yarn shop in Manhattan when I was living there way back. And she spoke kindly of him, and he'd helped her out. And I had met the Noro back then and fell in love way back when with the Noro. So I approached him, and he asked me if I wanted to do a book using the Noro yarns. And, of course, yes, I did. And that was how that started. And then I've done 5 books for KFI with Noro, and then we did the Noro Meet the Man book with Soho Publishing. which is actually kind of a retrospective, you could say. There was nothing new in there. It was just picking the best ones, and they did that. And that book was well received as well. So Norrell is my, I just love Norrell. And a lot of people, they think it's the colors, or I guess you could say that the colors is the most, is the first contact point with the Norrell. But I actually like the yarn, what they, how they make yarn. Their yarns are very, very distinctive in terms of production, how they're made, and how they, the hand of the yarn, how they work up, how they are to knit with. A lot of people don't think that they're soft enough, which is actually one of the things I like about them, because I design in it rather with a kind of an architectural or structural way of looking at things. And so it helps. If you have soft yarns, they just hang. And if you have a little bit
right.
stiffer yarn, you can get get totally different things to happen. So it really suits me in many ways. And the color, the self-striping thing, what happened is I think somehow that I brought a new way. People didn't quite know what to do with the Norrell yarns. They've been around for a long time, but it wasn't. And then I just applied some other way of thinking to it that kind of broke open the box, you could say, and it got everybody thinking in a different way and about how to use self-striping yarns, which was, yeah, it was fun. So it suited me that the problems, I look at, it's kind of problem solving with designing. You know, you have this set of givens, and then you have to figure out, or at least the way I look at my job is to figure out the most appealing thing to do with this set of givens, so that because basically my job is to sell yarn. That's why I get hired, not for any other reason. No, it's true.
That is exactly, you know, it. And you've probably sold more Norrell than anybody ever.
I think I helped it, helped it along, and I know that I'm associated with Norrell. There's no question about that. People know me because of the Norrell yarns, you know. So it's helped me. I had the great fortune of going to Japan when I was making this book for Sixth and Spring, and got to meet him. And that was a wonderful experience, and see the mills and how they work and meet him. And it was great. So it's kind of the highlight of my career.
Well, that's a huge highlight. It's fascinating how getting to see somebody else's vision and then taking that vision one step further and understanding that he has seen the color and the texture. And then you actually put the structure to it and make something beautiful out of it. Is, as a yarn designer myself, I can only go so far. And then it's amazing seeing somebody who's taken what you've seen and bringing it up to the next level and sort of finishing the project. And that's kind of, I think, what really is amazing with what you've done with the Norrell yarns, because they have put, just put out this palette, and you create the picture. So,
well, that's a good way of looking at it, I guess. Yeah, I mean, I try and be really sensitive to some of the things that I've designed for Norrell. People say, "Oh, well, substitution, that's a big thing." Some of them you can't really substitute, because you're not going to get your. It's not, you know, I really try and go with the characteristics of the specific yarn. Some of them, I mean, a lot of them are substitutable, but I know one particular design that I've done that it just has never really quite worked that well in any other yarn, you know. So, and I really like that challenge, because it is a challenge to really try and understand the yarn and you know, what to do with it. I think that's a great, that keeps it fun for me, keeps it fresh.
Okay, so can we ask what pattern that was?
I didn't hear that.
Can we ask what pattern that was?
It was a pattern called Ekeby in Swedish, E-K-E-B-Y. It's a vest and it had it was the first one kind of that it's a hole pattern, you could say. I call them hole patterns. I don't have very fancy names for my stuff, but it's a vertical, it's knit side to side. It's done in the Eero yarn, which is a thicker yarn. It's a silk wool blend, pretty rustic. And it's basically just long buttonholes, but they stay open because of the nature of the yarn. And so, yeah, it just worked, you know. A lot of people, it resonated with a lot of people, and it was a cool way to use the yarn, you know.
Oh, awesome. And that's, you know, like I said, as you know, when in designing yarns, you just don't know where it's going to end up or what's going to work best out of it. And that's...
Well, yeah. I'm not a lace designer, you know. Like, you have beautiful yarn, but most of them are finer than what I usually work with. But you have great yarn. There's a big shawl thing, or there's a lot of lace going on. I think your yarn works really well in lace stuff, if I'm not mistaken. And that's another one. There are some great lace designers out there, and let them do their thing. And for me to go out there and try and compete with them, I have my own niche, and they have their niche, and there's room for all of us. Do you know what I mean? I try and keep to what I'm good at.
Exactly. That's one of the things that I really love about this industry, is that even though we're all in it, you know, whether it be designer or yarn manufacturer or yarn shop, everybody brings something different to the table. We all have a different approach, a different vision, and because of that, everybody seems to be helpful and friendly and wants you to kind of sort of a pay it forward type approach. People that have would seem to be our biggest competitors and you know, along the way, are just helpful. They are doing something different. That you've your own niche, your own approach, like you said, and then we've been helped many, you know, by many different people, many wonderful designers, many and other yarn companies. Do you have any? Was there anybody who helped bring you along and showed you the ropes in designing? And how to get patterns published and books done and things like that.
All right, ask me the last part again because I didn't hear it. You asked me a question.
Well, is there anyone who helped kind of bring you along and show you how to get designs published and books published?
If there was anybody that helped me.
Yeah.
No.
I'm
not very, you know, it's funny because I've been spending a lot of time thinking about this lately. Just, you know, the pay for instance, for submitting something to a magazine nowadays for me and for everybody, the pay is less than what it was 30 years ago. Now, 30 years ago, it was already nothing you could, you know, kind of make a living doing. So now it's even worse by four times because the inflation, depending on who you talk to, is the dollar's worth between two and four times what it was then. So I don't know why I brought that up, but it's...
Well, it's a really valid point, and that's...
When I do stuff for Vogue Knitting or any magazine, that for me is advertising. I have to look at it kind of as advertising because the pay isn't enough to warrant doing it, really. So, and this is an alarming trend in the business that it's hard,
it's
you know.
Sort of a, I think
it's harder
kind of
harder to get paid as a designer.
Well, I think it's partly sort of a victim of your own success kind of approach. There have been, you know, with this resurgence in knitting and the ease of actually, and so many tools out there to help you publish and, you know, where an individual can now catch something up and distribute a pattern, there's probably, you know, 10 times, 100 times more designers out there right now competing for the same spaces in the magazines. And that,
well, the problem isn't that. The problem is the amount of people that will work for free. And that's happened because of the Internet. The Internet has totally changed everything. And in my opinion, for the most part, it's been good. Because about maybe 4 years ago, and it actually has to do with Ravelry. I will say it that way. What happened is that the end consumer has been empowered in the sense that the industry has gone from being distributor yarn company driven to consumer driven. And that is a beautiful thing. However, it makes things very much more difficult for the big yarn companies, for anybody to get established in a bigger way, because the customer wants often a more local product. They want a, they're not that, they want a different product. I think they want a different system. I'm sure you feel this too. We're in a real time of change in the industry. There's a big change going on, and nobody really knows where it's going to end up, I think, or how it's going to shake out.
It is, you've been a pioneer since you started here, and we don't know where we're going to end up because of the fact that things can get widespread very quickly and things can go viral. You know, it can be a pattern by somebody nobody's ever heard of, and next thing you know, it's on Ravelry and 10,000 people are knitting it.
Stable. The stable element
oh, no.
of building a business, you, in order to build a bigger business, you need to have at least a certain amount of stability so that you, when you're taking your money and investing it into your business, you know, okay, you know, and then you've got some for speculation. And this is exactly what you brought up is exactly what I'm talking about. Something can go viral and you think, and then you're scrambling and you don't even maybe have enough yarn to supply. And then you go into production and then that's over with and you're sitting there with a lot of yarn. Now, this is, it's very, very difficult to gauge these things, and it's gotten even increasingly more difficult to gauge it. And it's really easy to get caught holding the bag, as they say, if you're not careful. You know?
It is, and on the flip side of it, you know, you can by the time something pops, either you don't, you know, you've run out, it's been discontinued, you can't get that quality of cashmere
exactly.
anymore. Who knows?
It's difficult for everybody right now. It's difficult for designers and for the producers, the distributors. And it's a really fun time for consumers. And I think, like I said, I embrace that. I think that's good. I think it's driving. I think the whole knitting scene is much more interesting than it's ever been. I think there's some absolutely amazing patterns out there. I wish everybody would charge for their patterns. To me, it doesn't matter. Charge for your pattern. You did some work. You have something that's interesting to people. I think there's a certain idea out there that people can start to design and get into the industry by not charging for their patterns. And I think I don't think that is a proper way of thinking. Because if you don't value your work, why should anybody else value it in the future? It doesn't really make sense to me. But so it's an interesting time. It's a very interesting time.
Definitely, and especially, you know, I think you've given a lot of insight to designers out there that when you do put out this product, it has a value. And I know as a manufacturer, the value to me for a design is the amount of yarn that it will sell. When we
right.
plan and are costing out a yarn, we figure in how much we need to do, and it, we think of it as a promotional expense, you know, in
exactly.
you know, and look at the return that a designer pattern will get. And because of the instability in the market, you don't know which pattern is going to catch on, catch people's eye. Some things that we think are just absolutely stunning and the most beautiful things ever don't do well, and some very simple, basic things that you kind of go, all of a sudden just go crazy.
Yep.
So, and this, I do like the idea of having the contact that you can have now with consumers, because you can get instant feedback, you know, whether it's, you know, through an email, through Facebook, whatever. There's so many different venues of contact now. You can get quick feedback as to, yeah, you're going in the right direction. No, you need to make, you know, these are the things we as consumers would like to see.
Yes. I'm very worried about the local yarn shops, actually. That's one of my big worries, how many of them are going to make it, you know, because of the internet and the shows, and it's the trends are moving away, the sales are moving away from the local yarn shops.
They seem to be in some direction, but the ones that have the passion, because the shows are only there once a year, you can't touch things on the internet. So when you have somebody that you can go to on a daily or weekly basis for help, if they've got the passion to show you, you know, the new things that are out there, the local yarn shops, I think, that are successful are the ones that are kind of distilling what all is out there and bringing to their customers the things that they think are valuable. The ones that go out and find the best quality yarns, find the designs and patterns, try them out themselves. So watching the shop owners that really are paying attention, that have the passion, I still see lots of activity and growth in a lot of those kind of shops. I think long gone are the days of just sticking stuff on a shelf and waiting for people to come in.
I hope you're right. I'm not getting that feeling.
Yeah, I am.
Good.
We just met a shop owner here locally and had a little time with her. And watching what her name is Kathy Book, and the shop is Mooncat Fibers in Dallas, New Mexico. Kathy is out there reading, listening, looking at everything. And she finds the things that are fun and exciting and brings them in. I'm really impressed at just how many things she has knit herself to see if people will like it. And then in her getting to know her customers, she can make the recommendations and kind of, since not everybody has the time to sift through everything to see what all is out there, because there are so many choices in yarns and designs, that she kind of is just a facilitator in making things fun for them and keeping it from being work and finding a project to where they can just enjoy doing something that they love.
That's great. That sounds great. So if you can get your customers, if you have a customer base that is interested in that, that you can be the facilitator for bringing them a choice selection, then that's, you're right. You're right. That's perfect. Then, you know, the days of just having a yarn shop with acrylic yarn, the Ma and Pa kind of yarn shop, forget it.
That's just because of the number of choices that we have out there. In the chat room, talking about people who are talking about the distance to their yarn shops and figuring out the ones that work best for them. So talking about this kind of feedback, would we like to take a few call-ins from...
Sure.
Yeah. All right, if anyone would like to call in...
Let me just say one thing.
Sure.
You asked me early on about... I'm living in Atlanta, part-time, or most of the time. So I spent all these years in Sweden, and then now I'm spending more time in America again. That was all I wanted to say.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, thank you.
No, that's
all right. If anyone would like to call in and ask Cornelia a question, our phone number is 718-664-9655. And in the meantime, would you be interested in a, I guess, let's see here, I'm telling us what might be next for Cornelia Tuttle Hamilton? Do you have a project on the horizon?
Yes. I think that I'm gearing up to do a book, a real book, another published book. But I think I've finally figured out what my place is in terms of design, and I think that I would like to do another book of new things. So I'm going to be working in that direction. And I want to do, I want to keep going with my thing, keep it fun. Somebody asked me in an interview a while back, they said, how can you still like this after 30 years? Aren't you tired of it? No, I'm not at all. And I think part of it is that I just have not, I don't do it for money. I mean, I make a living doing it, but I don't do it for the money. So I don't design in yarn that doesn't interest me, and I don't just crank out stuff, why don't you just do some simple stuff? No, I usually say it doesn't pay me enough for me to be bored. So at least if I can have the stimulation of figuring out something that I think is interesting, then it kind of makes it more worthwhile, So I'm just going to keep bringing, I'm going to be branching out a bit using other different yarns. That's another thing I want to do is work with different people, broaden that out again. So,
that sounds like fun. And one of the things that I do love about this industry is because it's people's passion and such, and that even though all of us are in it who are trying to pay the bills, we do it because we love it. We are doing it because it is fun, and you're creating new things. So Tammy here asked a question, and this is a really good one. I understand you're going to be teaching at Stitch of East coming up.
Yes.
I am. What will you be teaching?
Oh, well, the fun thing about Stitch of East is they asked me, I'm going to be in the opening event or whatever it's called, with Barry Klein and Fiona Ellis, and we're going to be talking about raglans. And we're each introducing a raglan design that will be featured in Knitters Magazine. That's very exciting. Then the classes I'm teaching are, one is on working with holes in knitting called The Whole Story. One is based on the knitting techniques that are special for the Reflections book that I did for Universal with using the Poems line. And then another workshop, knotty knitting, not naughty knitting, wrong, knotty.
Okay.
So I have a technique where you knit knots into the fabric, so we're going to be doing that one.
Wonderful. Well, I actually want to see that, but not even. I think that would be
Are you going to be there?
We are actually going to have second daughter's wedding right there.
Oh, my goodness. So, oh, excellent.
Yes.
Well,
so
congratulations.
We will unfortunately be missing it. Thank you.
Oh, that's
Thank you. We're excited.
All right. We'll forgive you this time.
All right. Well, we will. We'll show back up for Stitches West and hopefully get to see you out there once more.
We bump into each other regularly.
I know, and truly one of the most fun things I've ever done is the the words with friends that we've played, and you know, other than being humiliated on a regular basis by you, it's
you know, they kicked me off of that, so now I'm just doing Scrabble. I'll find you on the Scrabble thing.
Okay, well, you know, I guess they figured that, you know, they can't have the human dictionaries out there playing, just you know, embarrassing everybody. So I thank you so much for spending time with us, for everything you've contributed to the industry. Okay.
Well,
and I just have to let everyone know that Teresa had to go mute because of the feedback here, and hopefully by next week we will be back at home with a better phone and internet connection, and can try and do this with a little smoother.
Well,
so,
let me ask you a question or two, if I may. Do we have any more time, or are we done?
Oh,
are we done?
As much as you could ever want. No.
All right. So, how long have you been making bison yarns?
Been doing it just at 9 years now, I think, since the actual beginning.
All right.
It's been an adventure every day.
Yes, it has. But you've been all around, and I know you've even been over in. We've seen each other in Germany at the Hungerbike show. What did you think about that show?
It was first of all, it was just an amazing experience getting to see a lot of the things that don't make it to the States. But the whole approach is so different in Europe, and that's kind of why I was really excited about speaking with you. Is because they have so much more knitting tradition, because it is a daily event with them, and it's getting to expose them to something different was pretty exciting. The reception we got was amazing.
It's a beautiful show.
it is, and I have to say that you know, as much as I love TNNA and doing those type of events, seeing what some of the larger companies do there is amazing and pretty impressive. We've had kind of an interesting reception worldwide lately. We just got our first order actually in from the Falkland Islands. I thought that was kind of
That's
impressive.
Exciting. Wow. The first place we met, and Teresa was along too, was at the Knitting and Stitching Show, which is actually this weekend in London.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It was really funny. I'd gotten an email prior to the event from Taiyu Landry at Koigyu that said, if nothing else, go find and meet Cornelia Zettel Hamilton. She's one of the most interesting people you'll ever meet. And, you know, when you get that kind of endorsement and such, we were really excited to meet you. And you far exceeded anything that we were ever told.
We had fun that weekend. That was the first time I saw you. That was I was actually showing there too in somebody's booth, but we won't go into all that. But so you guys have been out in the world and you're moving around and you're working with your partner in life, which I think is I have to say I'm not envious of a lot of things, but that was something that I really wanted to do in my life, was to work with my partner, and that hasn't happened, but. I can surely get a lot of joy out of watching you two work together, and I like that.
Well, thank you. I am truly blessed in getting to work with the love of my life. It does make the daily adventure interesting, especially when
it's the right way to live, I think, on some level. I decided many, many moons ago, way, way early, I didn't want to commute to work, so I've always worked at home. I just like that. And now the place that I have in Sweden now, I have a shop in the front and I live in the back. And I like that.
Now we're envious.
Well, I'm not really allowed to do that because of zoning and all this stuff, but I just decided I have to live my life the way I want to and be discreet, and now I'll probably get busted because I said it on the radio, but Who cares?
That just makes you a hooligan too. There is a little bit of hooligan in all of us.
A little bit of rebel.
Yep. Yeah. And that's kind of what makes this fun is.
Consider it rebel. I'll allow for that title. But
okay.
And I still haven't worked with Yar Yarns, and I really need to. And they're thin for me, and I get scared.
Yeah, me too, to be honest. Like I said, I enjoy making them, but I sure love watching people make pretty things out of them. We are doing some heavier weight yarns now and some things that have better suited to structural. Yeah.
Really? All right. Can I see them online or where can I see them?
You can see them in your mailbox as soon as we get the show over with.
All right, great.
We'll just do that. Okay. And speaking of which, why don't we... where can we find you online? Sorry, Teresa's chiming in here. I apologize for not being on. Where can we find you online, and what can we find? Where's the best way to get a look at Hamilton Yarns and the Heaven's Hand line?
HamiltonYarns.com is my website. And then I'm heavily on Facebook. I've got a fan page there, whatever that's called, or you know what I mean. And then I also have a Heaven's Hand page and my own private page. And I like to way of sending out information as well. I've got a Twitter account, but I don't do anything there. I think it's hooked up to my Facebook. I don't understand Twitter, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, you're not alone there.
Yeah,
that's
well, I'll
as
admit
well.
I'm going to start. One thing I'm going to start doing. You asked me about something in the future. I'm going to start writing about our experience, and by that I mean a little bit more, maybe just my musings and different things, and about the trends through the years, and about things that I think would be helpful for people to think about in shaping the future of what we're doing, just to keep some things in mind. So that kind of thing. And I wouldn't call it blogging. I have never blogged. I'm pretty shy. It's very strange because I don't seem shy when you meet me, and I don't have a problem talking like this, but I'm basically pretty shy, introverted when it comes to blowing my own horn and, you know, writing things and stuff like that. But I feel like I feel like, okay, now is the time to get out there and start. So my first little article is going to be on blocking.
Okay.
Because I have very, very strong opinions about blocking. So, and you'll see that on Facebook. You can, I'll be posting where those articles will be and things like that. So, yeah.
That gives us something definitely to look forward to. So we will.
Well, we got to keep our
eyes. We will be keeping an eye out for it. Yes, and I think we're really going to enjoy hearing your thoughts on the industry and what we're having, what's going on. So,
yeah.
I want to thank you very much for spending some time with us, and especially being this our first interview ever, and you know, especially for putting up with the lag here. You really made this a pleasure for us, and easy and comfortable. I guess how nervous we were coming into this, but it was a lot of fun. Next week, our guest is going to.
I really enjoy you guys. So when Benjamin asked me, I said, "Of course, that would be great." So, and I look forward to seeing you both real soon, somewhere in our travels. And thank you for all your kind words about my work and everything else. And have fun at the wedding.
We shall. Teresa says thank you very much as well. This is really, we were very excited when we heard it was going to be you, because there's nobody more poised and graceful. So that's been wonderful. And we want to thank Benjamin very much for letting us have this opportunity to have a little fun. and that mostly for having the faith in us not to destroy the studio here or run out of hands. And I hope we hope we've kept you slightly entertained for this last hour. Our network will be here one more week, and our guest will be Drew Omborski, the crochet dude, and he's going to be talking a little bit about his new project with Halos for Hope, and just going to be another unbelievably fun person. So thank you all very much, and Benjamin, thank you again. This has been truly an experience. God bless you all. Take care.